right, welcome back, everybody. Here we are once again talking some more Survivor 41. Dominic, episode 5. Before we dive into the specifics of episode 5, I was actually just thinking slash remembering slash wondering to myself, and I'm hoping you can provide some sort of clarity because I'm still not entirely sure what the scoop is here. I feel like what I have seen is that the game within the game, the online thing, the puzzles for kids to solve, only goes through like episode 11. Do we know if at this point, if it is just going to be 11 episodes and we're like rapidly approaching the halfway mark already?
Gotta be honest with you, I had forgot that that was even part of the game within the game at this point. I had heard no discussion of that whatsoever since, I guess, we all collectively figured this out week one, week two, and I'm sure someone did week three, but I don't remember it. And now it's just fully slipped my memory altogether. So would not surprise me if there are 11 and or 12 or 13 episodes, and if the game within the game was or was not part of any of those. So glad to be a service.
Yeah, I believe it is the case that the game within the game still only goes on the website through episode 11, and people are kind of using that as a game within the game within the game to extrapolate that we may only have 11 episodes in total. And if that is the case, then we are indeed rapidly approaching the halfway point here. It certainly looks like, while not a merge, something is happening next week that's going to bring us into the next phase of the game itself rather than within the game. So just wanted to take a moment here at the top of the podcast to really soak this in on at least a personal level and encourage others to do so as well, because at least for me, I feel like this season is already kind of flying by.
Yeah, it really is going fast. I thought you were going to be reveling in your 100% hit rate at solving the game within the game every episode, and you're very proud of yourself, and we should all be congratulating you here. But it sounds like that isn't what this is.
I don't think I even noticed the game within the game in either of the last two episodes. And had I noticed, I don't think I would be batting 1,000 still at this point. But Dom, plenty of other things that I did notice.
Look, I got the day one alliance thing. I got the wand off subtle shout out from Miles and I, and it's all been downhill from there.
Yes. Well, we will see whenever the news breaks about what the final schedule ends up being. I guess it is very possible that we will get 13, 14 episodes as usual, and we're barely cracking the one third of the way through the season point. But for the moment, we will let that mystery be and just table that discussion until we have some actual firm answers there. But episode 5, a lot going on. Honestly, more going on in episode 5 than I realized on the first watch. As I sat down to watch it again and do notes for the podcast, I was shocked at how much there was that I thought was worth diving into here on the podcast. And that did not include several minutes at the top of the show talking about something completely meaningless and unnecessary. So let's not waste any more time here. Dom, I think the way to do this is we have, of course, the Green Tribe going to Tribal Council this week, and then at least something for each of the other two tribes from before the challenge as well. So let's kind of sandwich them in between some Green Tribe content. Basically take the same approach the editors have been taking for the last couple weeks as well here. So we'll start with Green. We'll go through Blue and Yellow in some order. We'll talk about the challenge and then the vote. So Green, right away, I thought, found themselves in an interesting situation here. We were wondering what was going to happen as far as Brad being voted out with the Beware idol, the three-way idol in his pocket, and whether it was going to be rehidden, what was going to come of it if it did go that route. And indeed, we are going to be rehiding that advantage, or if you want to call it that. And this is going to be the time now where the three remaining people on this Green Tribe, specifically Genie, are going to find this Beware advantage that they already know what it is, and Genie's going to run and tell the other two, hey, I found it, let's work this through and figure out what we want to do about this, because we don't necessarily have to reopen it if we're not inclined to do so. And they all agree, at least at first, that we're going to just leave this where it is, not open it, not risk anyone's vote. We still don't know if the blue team has even found their clue for this yet, and it would be a huge waste to open this, cost ourselves leverage going forward, at least in the immediate short term. Except for Dom, as soon as Genie leaves and like goes and gets in the water, Shan starts humming her song, and Ricard seems like can't wait to get down on this plan as well. They decide they're going to open this behind Genie's back and spin a yarn to her about why they're going to be mentioning the catchphrase at the challenge. What did you think of this?
So I believe that's three renditions of the Shan music in five episodes for those playing along at home on that front. I like this. I like that firstly it was rehidden, and so we get to not have Xander just be totally hung out to dry for the rest of, I guess it would just be this episode as it turns out, so maybe that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. But okay, I'm rethinking this in real time. Maybe with that in mind, I don't like it so much because it just kind of crowds out other stuff that could be happening in the episode, and then there's only a single episode left for that to make itself known. I do wonder if so we get this flashback to Nasir found the third part of this Triforce over on the Blue Tribe the day before. Was that before or after this would have been rehidden on whichever color team this is?
I certainly don't know. I would imagine that it was rehidden shortly after Brad left, but it seems like it was in such an obvious place that they would have found it the previous round if it were rehidden by then. So I don't know at all as far as the production timing and motivation goes along those lines, but I do understand that as producers, especially when you know this is already going to be a storyline on the show either way, they have plenty of incentive to rehide it, even if it's not necessarily immediately after, which I would think it absolutely should be, but I don't know that that is necessarily what we saw play out in practice there. But the big question
I know that in theory all of this has to be mapped out in advance, and it's not going to be contingent on how any actual details of the twist go within the game, but you have to imagine if they were on the fence and they did have some agency over whether to put this back in, seeing that not just that second, I guess the second part now being found, but that it was Nasir who found it, someone who you're already building this kind of great feel-good story around. The fact that he got it and you get to set up this big reveal at the next challenge, that kind of got to tempt you in that direction, right? To put it back in a rather obvious location to set all of this up. And both Ricard and Shan and Genie as well, just in her ignorance of what's going on here, all play their parts to perfection. So I think this easily could have flopped at the end of this being relevant finally, but actually I think everyone did their part to make it as fun as it could have been. And now also we have three idols entering the game here to add this whole new variable going into the merge or lack thereof,
right? And that is why I think the producers, not only because they want the TV narrative to pay off in some way, but the game itself, I think they want to at least in theory be more exciting by the presence of these three idols. But the main concern that I had when I was watching this play out in real time is as follows. I actually really liked seeing them, and this is an idea that we had actually talked about in a previous podcast about if this is rehidden. One conceivable idea is everyone left on the team finds it, makes it clear we all know where this is, we're gonna know if anyone gets greedy, but we could just leave it unopened, not risk any of our votes. And the big motivation for me in thinking along those lines, and I don't think there's much the producers could do to stop them if they wanted to go this route, is it will approach this from the Shan and Ricard position of we're torn about whether or not we want to open this rehidden three-way immunity idol situation. We know what we're going to get out of it. We know what cost it may, at which it may come, depending on whether or not the blue team has found it at this point. And we still don't have any information along those lines until we get to the next immunity challenge. So even setting aside the sheer likelihood that you may open this up and only be losing your vote in a situation where you may be a tribe of three going to another tribal council, which of course also then requires factoring. And we have our extra vote that we got from JD, so not the end of the world if that situation happens. But meandering around here, my main objection, I would say, to the idea of opening this idol, while fully granting that having a hidden immunity idol is in general a pretty good thing, if you are playing Survivor, when you know that if you just don't open it, the other two idols, in this case at the blue camp and the yellow camp, cannot be activated, and you are about to go into a merge situation, or air quotes, kind of merge situation or a swap or whatever's coming next, and I feel like there's at least a compelling case that can be made for shutting down the prospect of not one, but two other people that you haven't probably met yet, or at least spent any significant amount of time with yet, having idols of their own. I think it would be very, very tempting for me, if I'm Shan and Ricard, to essentially be conscientious objectors to activating idols for two other people on opposite tribes, and just sacrificing my own shot at an idol here.
Yeah, normally I would say there's really no downside to having the idol if it's just a solo thing, because worst case, you burn it yourself at a vote where, yeah, probably you're not in danger, but what if, you know, let's just shut off that 5% chance right now, get it out of the way, get my peace of mind back. But here, you can do that, but then you've just willingly put two idols into the game in the hands of people who you don't really know too much about yet. So I wonder if you have this like weird first mover thing where I guess once you open it, you're priced into just saying it no matter what. But if you knew it was exactly Nasir who found the now the second part versus someone else, I wonder if that info is ever enough or would ever be enough to move the needle for you in terms of, do I want to do this or not? Like, if you, I don't know how you would have a sworn enemy on another tribe who you haven't met yet, but if you did, like, let's say just bad vibes across the map from at a challenge or something, would that dissuade you, do you think, from opening it yourself? Or even knowing that, it's like, all right, well, they have it, I have it, that's kind of a wash, and now maybe this third person, I can rope over to my side. I feel more confident in that.
I think it probably would play a role in just the grand scheme of, like, theoretically thinking about this decision. But what they do know is squarely Xander is the one who will have his idol and his vote reactivated if we open this and say the phrase, and someone from blue does the same. And we also don't even know if anyone from blue is going to find this in time. So with that in mind, just knowing those two specific things, I really would have, I think, a lot more concerns than certainly these two did. I would imagine more concerns than I would be comfortable with if it came down to it. Like, I don't know that I would have been that tempted to open this idol if I did get the vibe from specifically Jeannie here that she was on the same page, which I believe is a pretty reliable vibe there from the Shan and Ricard spot. It seems like Jeannie was indeed down to just leave it there and not open the door for any sorts of negative kind of ramifications, of which there are many, as far as I would be concerned here. But at the same time, and I am certainly not trying to allege anything nefarious by any stretch here, and I don't know with any degree of certainty that this actually played a role in this decision-making process here, but I would feel very confident that opening this re-hidden idol and doing everything I could to make them activated, especially in such a way where I'm being sneaky and diabolical and going behind Jeannie's back and singing my song while I'm doing it, is something the producers would love. And I'm, again, not saying there was any kind of shadiness going on in either.
But if
you were. I just mean, if I were a player out there, it would cross my mind that, like, as far as what they want me to do is concerned, this is not even close. They would want me to reopen this every single time.
Oh, yeah. That game within a game is very easy to solve.
Yes.
If you're Ricard and Shan there. I wonder if, at this point, like, if you're Ricard, it seems like both Ricard and Shan did sincerely want to take the other one to the next step, to vote out Genie if it came down to that. And maybe you try to put that out of your mind until you actually lose a challenge and have to confront that vote. But I wonder if finding this collectively forces you to actually think about that ahead of time, maybe more than you would like to. But if there's any chance that Ricard is going to turn on Shan or vice versa, then what you don't want to do is go through all the steps of activating the idol. And if you're successful, then now you maybe have to finagle this vote around an idol being in play. And even if you do that, now there are two idols on other teams, which can only really work to your disadvantage. So I wonder if, let's say, Ricard did have designs on blindsiding Shan, going with Genie, or the other way around. It seems like that might have been more in play, actually. Then I think you would, there might be this like cold war going on over, do we actually open this or not, and open this Pandora's box? Because it seems like they were happy to kind of spread the wealth in terms of, well, I'm going to say the phrase, and I'm going to get the idol in that case, versus, well, I therefore will have sole custody of this extra vote for the time being. And so if one of us gets voted out, that advantage goes out with me. But yeah, something to think about, I suppose. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, I do want to say, as always, you know, this is a heavily edited TV show, and it is very possible that based on whatever was actually going through their minds out there on the island is not being represented in its entirety here on the TV episodes. And they may have felt like it was a slam dunk that the move is to go behind the Genie's back, open this, make sure that our extra vote goes into the hands of the person not opening it. So if we do have to go back to a tribal council, we at least have that and can still get three votes into the urn. There are plenty of reasons I could come up with, I think, that would make this a more compelling prospect than it seemed like to me, Colin Stone, at the time that I was watching this episode. That being said, if you are going to open it, which I, again, personally would have, it seems like, a lot more reservations about than they did, in the timeline where you are going to pull the trigger there, I think they knocked it out of the park with the implementation. First of all, with planting, I think it was like one of Ricard's bracelets or something, in there as a decoy and repackaging it. So if Genie did decide,
oh, that was great. Yeah.
Yeah. Decide to get greedy, I thought that was an excellent touch. And then furthermore, the handling of, we'll give Genie a believable backstory for why we are saying the phrase at the challenge. We're going to tell her that we're going to do it to mess with the other tribes and see what happens and who says what on those other mats, so that at the very least we'll have information going forward. And on their end, they might think that their idols are activated and they won't be. And we'll have all of what we want happening here and relaying all of this to Genie. I thought they absolutely nailed that. So while I would be probably leaning in the direction of don't open this rehidden idol, in general, based on what I think I know, again, from this heavily edited TV product, if you are going to open it, I thought they did a really good job at handling that.
Yeah, so moving over to the blue team now, we get their obligatory scene of the episode here, where Danny and Deshaun, who are still thick as thieves, are planning once again to maybe throw the challenge and get rid of Erica. And this time they decide to run it by Nasir. And previously, we had Danny, who he was a professional athlete, and it really burned him up inside to even consider the idea of throwing the challenge. Good news, everyone. Danny, no longer former professional athlete, has no reservations at all about throwing the challenge now, is all in on this. Nasir isn't, though. And here's where we get this potential wrinkle, where they have to kind of bring him in this, like, guys pact almost to get him on board. I wonder if Nasir when this idea is being floated, cast his mind back to the previous challenge where it really seemed like he was having to do more effort than he probably should have been. And Deshaun, who is a fit young gentleman, seemed to be lagging a little bit behind in the water there. Does he start to put the pieces together of maybe this idea was attempted already behind his back?
I don't know. Although that is certainly something that could have conceivably crossed his mind there. And I thought this was a really interesting kind of dynamic here with Danny and Deshaun on one side. It seemed to me genuinely wanting to make sure Nasir was cool with it and get him on board. And while they would, I would guess, have preferred to throw this challenge and go vote someone out for a number of reasons, many of which we talked through last week when this came up. I thought it was both unexpected and cool, at least, again, as presented on TV, where when Nasir pushed back on that and said, oh, I don't want to throw the challenge, they seemed to pretty quickly change their tune and say, okay, well, we don't want to do it if you're not on board. And I thought on Nasir's end of that, he was cool about it too, where he, I think from his perspective, thought, okay, they want to throw the challenge, I'm not down with that at all, but at least they asked me, and at least they seem to have changed their mind, and I'm just really happy to be included in that decision-making process there. So I thought this had the makings of a situation that could have gone very poorly for all parties involved, but it seemed like across pretty much all cards here, at least potential kind of crisis was averted.
Yeah, I think once you suggest the idea, you can't put that back in the bottle now.
Right.
Like, it's clear that you are at least considering this. And if Nasir just says, no, flat out, I'm not on board, then if you get to the next challenge and they're trying to throw the challenge, they have to do it in such a believable way where it's like, it's good enough to seem like they are realistically giving it their all, while also poor enough that they might actually lose a challenge, which it seems like they have to put, especially with Nasir being this one-man workhorse, you really have to put work in to not win the challenge, as Luvu, if precedent is any indication. So that's a tough needle to thread there. And I guess, actually, if you get to the challenge and you are sincerely trying your best and you do badly, well, now that's even suspicion that gets thrown on you regardless, because, you know, now Nasir is going to ask the obvious question. But, crisis averted, it seems like, for now. And we know there's a something or other, an amalgamation coming at the end of the episode. And so crisis averted potentially permanently. And we're now heading into Emerge, where we have like a real kind of glue foe situation, perhaps. Or we have this one tribe that has never tested their bonds in any real way whatsoever versus the other teams, and especially Ricard and Shan now. They're these battle-hardened veterans of Tribal Council, and so I think that mismatch and experience is going to be a big deal for at least the first vote, if not after that.
Yes, I think you were right about that, and there could be other reasons that this blue team, I guess, may have benefited a bit from going to a Tribal Council before whatever we're calling this merge that's not really a merge goes down. But I'm sure we'll see a lot more about that in the coming weeks and address it in a more timely way. But one other thing that I really liked as this whole, like, do we want to throw the challenge scene was playing out is they're pitching it to Nasir in terms of, oh, you know, Erica has kind of been not necessarily rubbing us the wrong way, but at least raising some eyebrows and acting at least somewhat suspiciously, and they're kind of speculating that Erica may have found the idol by this point. And this is all happening before we get to the immunity challenge and we find out that Nasir has the idol himself. But on a rewatch, there's a very fun cut to Nasir when they're all talking about the idea that Erica might be the one with the idol. Nasir, they get like a close-up of Nasir, as far as I can tell, and maybe I'm just kind of painting onto this what I want to see because I know what's coming later. It seems to me like he is very nervous looking, saying, yeah, I agree, I think it's Erica, when he knows that he already found it earlier that morning or so, because I believe this is happening this is definitely happening before, excuse me, after Nasir has already found his piece of the three white idol there. So really liked that. And then, of course, at the challenge itself, when the first two people are doing their catchphrases, at some point they work in a cut to Nasir there as well, where he's just kind of laughing at the awkwardness of these mystery phrases being said that, as far as the real-time viewer is concerned, we don't know have any kind of like significance to Nasir at that point. So I'm sure we'll touch very soon on the flashback itself, but even beyond that, a couple of really fun kind of editing tricks, for lack of a better term, in here as things pertain to Nasir knowing what we know now. So liked that quite a bit as well. So the only other thing I think we got at the Blue Camp this week was Sydney spearfishing. Was that this week or was that last week? I'm already mixing up the
I want to say it was this week.
I think it was this week, but I don't know that there's been a scene all season long that I have less to say about and was potentially even more confused by. Like, why is this in here?
Colin is an attractive woman spearfishing.
I guess so.
In a tropical location, setting this, like, there's going to be some amount of that. You know, that is the one cross-season constant across all 41 editions at this point. Also, something that really stood out on rewatch was there was this amazing scene with Heather where, just kidding. Nothing from Heather whatsoever, yet again, for a fifth consecutive week. And at this point, I don't quite know what to make of that. It's starting to get into the territory where you wonder, like, does she quit? Does she get medevaced? Does something untoward happen? And we get a very serious disclaimer on the screen shortly before Heather gets whisked away. Like, I don't know what we're meant to make of this at this point.
I would say pretty much every conceivable circumstance has lent itself to at least one or two people on the Blue Tribe, given that they're never going to a single vote, being kind of ignored by the TV product. But yeah, this hadn't crossed my mind until you just mentioned it. Heather does seem to be getting such a ludicrously low amount of content. We saw her at that reward challenge last week, and I would guess that even though she hasn't had many confessionals along the way, casual fans at least remember that happening and could conceivably put a face to the name if pressed on it in some sort of hypothetical post-merge situation.
Snap hold on that. No way whatsoever.
It's too late at the hour that we're recording this for me to be texting casual Anna to find out if she knows who Heather is, but I will get on that soon and report back potentially next week. But now already forgot. I think you do raise an interesting point about the prospect of it has been so little as far as hearing Heather's perspective on like anything that is going on at camp, that we may be pushing the territory of this is for some sort of reason. So I'll keep that in my back pocket.
Just throwing it out there, I still think it's more likely that just, as you say, a tribe never goes to tribal council. We've got the two guys as like the main alliance and potentially the main four guys from that tribe come emerge or something. And then Nasir, who's the heroic underdog, turned klutz, turned heroic underdog yet again. We've got Sydney, who she's like the rich, entitled brat who is feuding with Erica. And we have Erica, who that really is all we know about her, is Sydney has it out for her because she, you know, got caught sneaking around trying to get Sydney out. So I guess in that sense, everyone else on this team, despite their general lack of visibility, they have some kind of characterization and development. We have there's like a elevator pitch for who each one of these people is, other than Heather, who basically does not exist as far as the show is concerned. One other theory, which is more likely, and definitely more likely on this season, is in the early days of the idol, there was this pattern that people developed of the people who get idled out tend to have pretty poor edits. So you think of like Alexis Jones in Micronesia, Kelly with dreads in Samoa. A bunch of these people get idled and then maybe I don't think it's intentional in the editing room. You know, this person gets idled, so say goodbye to them and say goodbye to their edit too. You know, you're not going to see them on the show. But I subconsciously or whatever, I think that does work its way into the mix. And on a season where now we have had three idols activated and there's a bunch of extra votes and shots in the dark and God knows what. If someone comes a cropper via like a twist or a bunch of twists at the same time, then if the way that happened seems kind of dumb or unfair or whatever, maybe it's for the best if we're not invested in that person when it happens. And maybe that's the only way someone like Heather is going to get picked off, as if it's just, you know, the vote rebounds off three different people and ends up at her feet.
Yeah, I like that sort of theory as well there. So we will monitor that situation as it develops. Although for now, I think we've monitored as much as we basically can at this point from the blue team. And I am guessing that they are probably going to be a focal point once we get to next week, and we'll see what happens from there. But I am optimistic that going forward, we are finally going to have more time and more reasons to see these people from the blue team, who all of whom I would say, I am very interested in seeing a lot more from there. So let's move over now, Dominic, to our yellow team, where there is quite a bit going on here, even though they are not the ones who are going to be going to tribal council here. We get set up with this kind of dynamic where it's very clearly Evie and Tiffany and Liana feeling like a tight three, and Evie is doing a lot of work to make Xander feel as comfortable as possible. And like, they're actually the tightest duo on the team. And hey, rooting really hard for you to get that idol activated and get your vote back ASAP. And it seems like Evie is putting in such good work, at least conceivably, with Xander, that this is now making Tiffany feel a bit uncomfortable. Like, maybe that's the direction that Evie's going to want to go if push comes to shove. And I might want to be a bit concerned about that. Tiffany, it does seem to me, maybe a bit along the more paranoid types when it comes to Survivor. And I'm, generally speaking, a big advocacy for paranoia on Survivor. I think you're crazy to not at least be somewhat paranoid pretty much 24/7 if you're out there playing Survivor. So I'm not trying to take anything away from Tiffany here. But
well,
the way...
in Tiffany's case, isn't she paranoid about something which she already knew the details of from a previous episode?
I would have said yes to that, but to be fair to Tiffany here, she didn't get to see the note that Xander had and has just been, I believe, relying on secondhand information. And it is a very convoluted kind of rule set if you don't get to see it written on the paper. So she's going to take matters into her own hands. And while Evie and Xander are off doing whatever they're doing, Tiffany and Liana are going to go through Xander's bag just to see what he's got up his sleeve. And what they end up finding is the piece of paper explaining those rules. So I think this is the first time that Tiffany's going to actually get to see. And actually, I think this time as well, it may just be Liana reading them and then relaying it again to Tiffany. But it does, in either case, seem like Tiffany is finally clear on what those rules are here. So with that, it now seems like literally everyone on the yellow team, literally everyone on the green team, and at the very least, of course, Nasir, and I believe Deshaun was given the details from Evie during their time on Shipwheel Island.
And then you have to think that at least one of Deshaun and Nasir will tell Danny too, right?
Yes, so, right. So it seems like Heather, maybe Erica, Sydney, we are very quickly running out of people in the entire game who don't know both how these idols work and who has every single one of them.
And then it seems like Sydney was kind of tight with the guys. And so if she gets roped in at that point, Erica and Heather are the only two people who have no idea what's going on. And maybe thinking like some weird mass hysteria has, you know, fallen upon the camp.
Yeah. And ironically, or maybe not ironically, but it is Erica herself, who at least Danny and Deshaun are nervous about having the idol when she is one of like the least informed people in the entire game, as far as we can tell, as things pertain to how, where these idols are and how they work. But Tiffany gets this information and wants to talk to Xander where...
Sorry to jump in, but there is a subplot to what you said, right? Where Evie and Deshaun had this cross-tribal thing. Deshaun gets to come back, and assuming he fills his team in on what's going on there, why would they worry, unless they've heard something from Erica, and she would have had to say the phrase at some point. So maybe Erica is just like saying random shit at challenges, and now that's spiraled out of control being used against her. But unless they heard something that made their ears perk up there, wouldn't they know that she at least can't be a part of that process? Now, maybe if you think there's going to be a ton of advantages and stuff in the game, maybe there are just also normal idols hidden in bushes or whatever. I could certainly believe that. But you have to think she isn't part of that whole setup, at least, right?
I would imagine that would be the case, but I really don't know. And I think it may just tie into what we talked about last week with JD, and it seems like the reasons that Shan and company wanted to eliminate him over Genie. Company is just Ricard in this case, where JD may have just had kind of like big move energy that made them nervous, that like he seems really eager to play a hard and fast game of Survivor, and that's not what I'm looking for in an ally. I do wonder if Erica just kind of gives off that vibe to the people on the blue team.
Yeah, that's kind of the vibe that I get as a viewer, and we have seen basically nothing of her, except what I guess they want to show us to set up that vibe. So yeah, I'm the Rube here, I guess. But anyway, let's move on to...
Let's go to Tiffany busting Xander in the lie about that, which cards on the table here. I got up to make some food at a certain point when I was watching this episode live and only caught this scene upon rewatching. So I've only seen it once and I don't have necessarily even a ton to be saying about it other than... this is blatantly awkward as hell. And Xander, I guess, did in the abstract the best that he could once he's put it out there that like, oh, I found it this morning. And then it can be conclusively proven that you knew about this long before this morning. At least the Xander portrayal that we got to see on TV seemed like he wasn't freaking out and stayed calm and tried to keep it friendly and just sweep it under the rug as best he could. But I do not know that Tiffany is going to be the most receptive audience to that kind of behavior.
Yeah, I think even if you're not doing anything suspicious, she might think you are. And so don't actually do anything suspicious.
Right, exactly.
Now it's just going to go haywire. But yeah, it didn't seem like it was going to happen. But the three idols now officially activated and within the game, and I guess other than maybe one or two people, everyone knows that they're in the game and that everyone else knows that they're in the game. So a lot of public info to be working with here going into this next big mix up. And love the reveal with Nasir just piping up, oh, Jeff, by the way. And then loved how all of that came together for sure.
Yes. And for Dom, I would say going into going into this, not knowing, obviously, that Nasir was waiting for his turn, and Shan gets set up to do the broccoli thing, and then Xander, to give him some credit after kind of punting in that previous scene with Tiffany there, does, I thought, about as good of a job as one could hope to weave it into the dialogue pre-challenge yet again, and his thing about butterflies just being dead relatives, and I totally bit on it going just back to Jeff, and there was like a solid three Mississippi of just dead silence before we cut over to Nasir, and Nasir finally is going to speak up. Dom, I think for the first time, and probably the last time, I think this is a spot where it is worthwhile to roll the clip of how this went. Not that anyone has forgotten about it, but just because it got me so jacked up, I would like to, as best we can, recreate that feeling for the people listening to the podcast right now. So here is how things went down with the three-way idol reveal.
I'm hot. I'm tired. She's vegan. She's losing her mind. She thinks everything's food.
Yes, I was like losing my mind. I didn't realize it until just now, but broccoli are just small trees.
We're a little rough. I think, you know, we're all just trying our best. We have no rice. He was talking about ladybugs being his dead relatives or something.
Actually, I said I truly believe that butterflies are dead relatives saying hi.
Oh my goodness. You know, we're all going crazy.
Well, you are off. Hi.
Jeff, I am as confused as a goat on AstroTurf.
Oh my god. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Oh my god. Oh my goodness, what is this?
Beware, advantage. If you take it, it is yours. And you must do what it says. Otherwise, leave it.
Perhaps a bit of a gratuitous kind of clip rolling there. Again, I don't think anyone has really forgotten about how that played out, but shout out to someone. Let me find the someone that I'm shouting out to who re-edited this with the genius music. This clip of Nasir giving us the big reveal. Sorry, I'm scrolling out. Sean Yenel, heard it both ways, who did an excellent job dropping extreme ways over this scene, and I don't want to roll that because I don't want to get yelled at for any kind of copyright infringement by Moby or whatever, but loved that as well. And I have watched this scene back now so many times over the course of this week, and I crack a smile every single time that Nasir pipes up here. I doubt this is going to come as anything close to a surprise to anyone who has pretty much ever heard me podcast about Survivor before. This is one of my favorite scenes of the entire season. You know, we've seen them experimenting with flashbacks already on season 41, and it's something they'd been at least dabbling in for the last couple of years. But for my money, this is by far the best flashback Survivor has ever done, and makes me very optimistic about the direction this sort of thing could go in the future. This is something we've been talking about for many, many, many years at this point, having been big time fans of The Genius since whatever it was, 2013, 2014. I would say this is borderline, if not literally, a genius caliber kind of flashback. Incredibly, yeah, very well executed. And, fingers continuing to be crossed that this is a direction the show is enjoying going towards and continues to lean into.
Yeah, this is baby steps in that direction. I think it's when this is just so part and parcel of what The Genius is, and really any game show in that vein looking to mix it up. I'm not going to give them so much credit for that just yet, but yeah, I mean, you can see why this works so well, and hopefully they look at that and decide to just keep doing it, because I think it's an easy layup there.
Yeah, and I know that there are probably plenty of people out there who were not huge fans of this flashback, but I would say the overwhelming majority of feedback that I have seen has been extremely positive about the way that they chose to present this on TV. And actually, one thing that I can confirm from the casual Anna woman on the street perspective is when she was watching this episode like 3 days after it ended up airing this week, she said, "Oh, I'm about to watch Survivor." And I said, "Oh, I have a question for you when you're done. So let me know when you're finished." And without any sort of prompting from me, when she got to this point, she texted me all caps, "Oh man, OMG Nasir, that was so cool." And so it seems like, at least with the casual fans, this was hopefully something that they were into as well there. So loved it, gonna keep loving it whenever they do this. And my only complaint would be, flash me back even further. Why stop here? I would love to see a situation where someone gets up to play an idol that we didn't even know existed until Jeff said, if anyone has an idol or an advantage and they want to use it, now would be the time to do so. I would love to have a flashback to like 22 days earlier. Kelly Wentworth in Cambodia being like the all-time classic example that I would use as like a hypothetical when we were talking over the years about this being something they could do in the future. I have no objection whatsoever to however extreme they want to make this sort of thing. It's all about the extreme ways here, Dom. So, yeah, loving all of this and can't wait for whenever this comes back, because I would imagine that this is something we are going to see again. So, the idols have indeed been activated. Just before we are going to hit the whatever this big group setting that is not Emerge is going to be, and pretty crucially, again, it does seem like virtually everyone in the game knows that that is the case and where those idols are. And in general, you know, there's not a whole lot you can do about it other than splitting the votes. If you know that the person you want to vote out has an idol and is potentially eager to play it at the time where you are going to be gunning for them, except Dominic. In this case, as we will go on to see, when the challenge gets played and then Shan and Liana are chosen to go to Shipwheel Island on their journey, which if Jeff has been calling it a journey over and over this season, I have been missing that. But I heard him say journey several times this week, so I guess that's what the show is calling it there. Liana is going
to...
Yeah.
And they really want it to be a capital J journey.
Yes,
they want
this
to be a life-altering, transformative experience for everyone who... You don't come back the same person when you go to Shipwreck Island, I guess is what we're calling it.
Shipwheel Island, I think, is what Rob is calling it, and thus what the entire Survivor podcast listening world is calling it there. So I'm happy to just go along and be consistent with whatever the group has decided on. But Liana is going to pick up this... knowledge is power advantage, where theoretically she needs some sort of inside information to make sure that this goes smoothly. But the way that it works is if the person that she, whatever her alliance ends up being, is gunning for has an idol and they know it, and they want to do something about that, they have plenty more going for them than just the ability to split the votes. What Liana can now do is essentially steal the advantage of her choice or idol of her choice from the player of her choice, and remains unclear to me if this is something that happens at the same time as all the other idols and advantages. Like, is it your view that this process is going to play out at Tribal Council, like at the same time as when idols would be played? Because when I first read this, I thought it was going to be something that like happened at the beach, but I it didn't even cross my mind until like a day or two after the episode aired that it would be something that would happen that directly near when that person would get up to go play the idol. And so it's...
Or even afterwards, right? Like, the votes have been cast. Jeff puts the pot down and says, if anyone would like to play such and such, and then just as someone is reaching into their bag, Liana pipes up and just decides to ask them a question, you know, a harmless inquiry, and then the whole game gets flipped on its head there. Like, That would be my naive reading of it, honestly. It's if you... So let's say you want to steal a vote, for example. When do you steal a vote? Well, you steal it at Tribal Council just before you're about to go cast your votes, right? And so it would not shock me if they extend that to when can you steal the idol? Well, it's just before idols are about to be played. And so you can do that after the votes have been cast, which really would make an even more overpowered advantage. I think I'm the only person that I saw comment on this who likes the idea of the steal an advantage. And that is dependent on the details. If it is that powerful and Lyanna can just wait and sit on it until there's any inkling that something might go amiss, then yeah, I don't like that. And contextually, in a season where the idols are more public than they ever have been, it's so much of a safe bet to just, you know, all right, well, I'm going to poach Nasir's idol and that's that. And I've just got this for free, essentially. But in general, I think I like this idea because if you're going to have so many advantages on a season, then I like that just as the outcome of any one vote now cannot be taken for granted because of all this other stuff going on, then you cannot rest on your laurels with your advantage either. That is up for debate too at any time. And if you can steal a vote, to me, the next logical step is stealing something that affects the vote, the advantage, the idol, whatever it is. So I kind of like that. And I like that, you know, you have an idol and you could either use it in some amazing heroic moment, some like Wentworthian overturning of a vote, or it could just be snatched out from underneath you and get turned against you and you could go down in flames instead. And if you contrast it to something like the idol nullifier, which I think was testing the waters for something like this potentially, I think that was always guaranteed to be a damp squib because I don't think that negating an idol play is ever really as exciting as the idol play itself or the idol play going wrong or whatever. I think that was always just doomed to fail. Whereas this, I can see lots of ways where this could be like the ultimate exciting TV as far as advantages go.
I see merit to a lot of the things that you were saying, and I don't know that I necessarily hate this as much as it seemed like the average Survivor superfan that I am seeing on Twitter appeared to on Wednesday night there. And I do like that, as you addressed, this puts a lot more pressure on people to use their advantages quickly, which I think is something that the show would deem good for the game. And the concern, and actually one other thing, sorry, that I, while I'm on the pros, this is not going to be a super long list, but I also like that, like, as producers, we want to work in a steal an advantage kind of mechanism. And there is, at least theoretically, more to it than this power that just plays itself. You do have to know whom to be asking and what to be asking for. Although, again, this is a season where we have been set up to this point with maybe the most public kind of idol information of all time, with this many people left in the game. So I get that on paper, there is some sort of skill that goes into playing this correctly. Although in this specific case, I don't know if that's going to be the hardest thing to pull off here if you are in Lyanna's shoes. But more generally, and this is something Stephen Fishback harped on both on Twitter and on the Survivor Know-It-Alls, the thing that really stood out to me is the fact that, like, on the parchment, on its own paragraph, in big, bold, potentially underlined, I'm not even positive about this, but it could have been underlined, type was, the person you ask is not allowed to lie. Those, just seeing those words and hearing those words, really struck the wrong chord with me. I feel like it is just kind of fundamentally counter to what Survivor is as a game, as a social experiment, whatever. What makes it interesting is that anyone could be lying to you at any time. And that, I think, is what made me wonder if it was happening on the beach rather than at Tribal Council where Jeff is there to moderate. Because it seems like if that, you know, if we have Jeff physically there whenever this is getting played, then he can just lay it out in person, the way that the rules work there. But it genuinely seemed to me like if someone tried to play this advantage on me, the part where it says the person is not allowed to lie would strike me as like the victim, for lack of a better term, of this advantage as so weird and uncharacteristic and potentially like counter to the entire premise of what Survivor is, that I think I would at least wonder, if not lean strongly towards the idea that this is not real. This has to be something that the person trying to play this on me made up themselves, like the same way that Jamal on season 39 got to create his own note on parchment, albeit with a pencil or a pen or whatever, at that point in time. I genuinely feel like seeing that one sentence, that the person is not allowed to lie, would push me over the edge of feeling like this is not a real advantage. Obviously, the producers would never include that caveat.
I think hypothetical you maybe has more faith in the producers than actual you does here in real time. But to you, is this fundamentally different than something like the detective role in Mafia, for example, where it's a game of hidden information, but you can unhide that information? And then I guess the difference would be you get it, and now there's an option for you to conceal it in... Well, okay, so... In that case, you can claim, I used my peek on Colin. Colin is the mole or the wolf, whatever. You know, you get where I'm going here.
The mafia.
And then, there we go.
I am the mafia pastor.
Yes. And then you can, if you want to, you can lie about that. I can lie about having peeked you. And so there's a claiming and counterclaiming going on. And there is still an element of hidden information, even if it's not the one that exists organically within the game itself. Whereas this way, presumably Liana can just show the parchment to whoever she wants, and then unless you think there is some Jamal-esque aspect to that as well, then she basically has solid proof that my information that I got here is real and I'm not lying, and if anything I just caught this other person in a lie. When and also, so let's say Liana says, Jeff, I'm playing this advantage, I get to ask anyone if they have an idol or an advantage and take it from them. Does she have to announce there and then that person cannot lie? Or can she put me to the test, see how I react, and if I lie, then drop the bombshell that actually, if you read the fine print here, I think you'll find you have to tell me the truth. And now, not only did I maybe lie initially about having this thing, I've just been caught in another lie. And now I have to row my way out of that.
I would imagine that, assuming now this is being played at Tribal Council, the way it will work is Jeff will say, if anyone has an idol or advantage and you want to play it, now would be the time to do so. Liana will raise her hand or say Jeff or whatever she's going to do to indicate that she wants to play this, at which point he will tell her, read the note aloud to the group, so that everyone is clear on the rules. I don't think it is a situation where, for instance, if she calls on Xander to be the person she's stealing from, I don't know that the door is going to be open for him to try to lie his way out of it. But we'll see. I'm totally unclear on the like logistics of how all of this is even going to go, other than I would imagine this is going to be incredibly painful for whoever ends up being the victim of this here, because this is another thing that I don't love about it as much. Not only does this function as an idol nullifier in terms of you can conclusively take the idol out of the hands of whoever you want at that vote that night, but furthermore, not only in Xander's shoes has your idol been taken away from you, it's now going into the possession of a person who would want your idol taken away from you. And I feel like that combination is at best very, very close to the borderline of overpowered, if not like glaringly overpowered. So whoever this does end up falling on, preemptive kind of condolences from me, because this, it seems like, is going to be pretty impossible to see coming, and also just about the worst news you could possibly get at whenever this ends up happening. But well, actually
So how much of the power of this advantage do you think is tied up in the power of whatever you're stealing versus the ability to steal it, if that makes sense? Because in one way, this is a reactive power, where if the advantage you have is pretty puny by comparison, like let's say you have the legendary Idol Nullifier, right? I'm stealing your Idol Nullifier. Great, I have an Idol Nullifier. What's that going to get me? Whereas if you have an advantage that in its own right is overpowered, well, now I have it and it's just as overpowered in my hands. So it does scale with the power of the thing in question. But then even if what you're stealing is just a normal feature of the game at this point, the fact that you can blow up someone's spot and like when you steal, like when you steal a vote, right? It's not just I have an extra vote. It's I've subtracted one from your total and I've added one to my total. So there is, it's kind of a doubly effective in that sense. The same way here, like you're not just gaining advantage for yourself. You're not duplicating something. You're taking it away. You're shifting the balance of power in this very active way. And so even if what you're getting for that is whatever, just the fact that you're able to do that, I think, says more about it than anything else.
Right, and I would imagine that in this sort of dynamic, which I would guess is going to be present on many seasons going forward with Survivor, people are not going to have that hard of a time knowing, in a lot of cases, who has what as far as advantages go. Although, you know, for people on season 43 and beyond, I think they probably are, when the rules for activating their advantages don't require them to be super public about it, probably going to be leaning more than usual, at least, on the side of keeping it to themselves now, just for fear that someone finding out about it could lead to it being taken away and put into their greatest enemy's possession there. But I would guess that when we see this played, which I assume we will somewhere down the line, it is going to be done in an impactful way, at least from the perspective of I'm going to take something that I know this person has and probably was counting on or about to use or something. I don't think it's going to very often be kind of insignificant like taking someone's Idol Nullifier probably would be. I think this is probably going to happen at a time where maybe even like the whole group knows we want Xander out, for instance, but Xander has an idol, whoever the person ends up being, someone has a vote steal that we don't want them to use and their whole plan hinges on that. I think removing it from someone else is far more beneficial and like a much bigger piece of the equation than necessarily even Liana gaining it for herself would be. And I don't even think it would be crazy or outside the realm of possibility if she were, again, hypothetically, to take Xander's idol just before Xander was banking on being able to play that idol. I don't think it would be ridiculous for Liana to take it from Xander and very publicly put it in the fire. I don't even want this myself. I just don't want Xander to have it. Or that sort of thing happening with whoever it is, not even necessarily this season. Because again, assuming it's at Tribal Council, you're then going to very publicly have whatever the advantage was. And I don't think it's crazy to just say, I'll get rid of it. I just don't want it to be in play. So obviously remains to be seen who this gets used on, what sort of effect it ends up having. Maybe it will go down.
I also wonder if maybe there's a chance to do what Ceri tried to do with Sarah's steal a vote, right? Where if Liana publicly, just before everyone has like locked in what they're going to do, if she, let's say she and Xander end up on opposite alliances, she tries to steal Xander's idol. Okay, well, that's powerful in and of itself, but then also someone in Xander's alliance who was relying on something going a certain way may get so spooked now that they do something silly or it throws all of their assumptions up in the air. And so you can use it just as a signaling device, if you like, more so than because you want the idol itself. And so if that may honestly be, if the idols weren't in the game and it was something a little weaker, that may be how you would want to use it, because it's more about the process here than the end result.
Yeah, we'll see what becomes of all of this, but again, I already feel bad for whoever it is that ends up having their plans upended, because I think, unlike Dom, the Edgelord of Extinction, I'm going to side with the what appears to be consensus here and say I'm pretty out on this being a thing. Although I do, again, think you make some good points about how it could be interesting, or at the very least less bad than some may be making it seem there. But let's not skip over, Dominic, the scene that led up to Lyanna getting this advantage, where she and Shan were off on Shipwheel Island by themselves and had quite a bonding experience, it seemed, both very eager to get to know one another. I would guess that that is going to be something that we're going to see play a role in the future. So liked that whole situation, that whole development a lot. And I think, yet again, the just opportunity being there for people to bond when they are not on the same tribe is a very, very good thing, and hopefully something that we continue to see on future seasons as well, and may even continue to see on this season if this sort of thing continues post-merge. But once again, we find ourselves in a spot where one of the people on Shipwheel Island just tells the other one, I'm not going to go for it. I need to protect my vote. You just get whatever advantage you want. And I don't think I have much of a problem with that. And I don't think many people have like an active problem with that sort of thing. I think it's just not super suspenseful. And the show probably doesn't love that it's a totally foregone conclusion in a couple of these cases, rather than an actual kind of dilemma or leveling war or whatever you want to call it, that probably has more upside than people just agreeing, okay, I'll keep my vote and you get whatever the advantage is there. But yeah, great stuff here from Shan and Lyanna. And incidentally, Dom, very strong reverse jinx by us last week, declaring that the photos from home and personal background kind of scenes that we got plenty of in the first couple of weeks and were very big fans of were gone. It seemed we talked about how, oh, I guess that's not going to make it past episode 2 or 3 or whatever. Not so. We actually get one for Shan this week here. And what a backstory on Shan. I had no idea.
Yeah, this could have been some like genius-esque reveal in and of itself, right? Where you think that Shan is just this good game player, but otherwise like unremarkable, feel good pastor character, and then the whole backstory comes out at the end. But it's surprising in a way that it took this long for us to get this intro sequence for Shan in episode 5, but all of the previous episodes have had so much Shan that you didn't really need an intro sequence for her. You get to save up this bombshell until the moment where you think you can use it for like maximum emotional impact.
Yeah, no, really well done here. Obviously, a big week for Shan, even by Shan standards, which I will not be turning into a terrible pun there. But really fascinating stuff about how Shan kind of got to this point in her life. And furthermore, Dom, one thing I've been meaning to ask you about as things pertain to Shan. I knew we had two Canadians on the season, and I knew one of them was Erica. I didn't remember who the other one even was until I heard Shan say something that included the word tomorrow. And she said tomorrow, and I was, oh, okay, Shan's the other Canadian here. And I don't even know if that has been made clear, like, explicitly on the show here. But Dom, as our junior Canadian correspondent, what are you thinking about the hypothetical prospect of Canadians are finally allowed on Survivor? I know we got our first taste of it with Tom on season 39, but it would be a pretty big statement for Canada, right? To finally, after 20 years, be allowed on Survivor and then just come in and smash. As our resident Canadian here, how would that make you feel?
I would be singing the national anthem there with everyone else. I don't know. It feels a bit selective to just sweep all of the unsuccessful Canadians under the rug, and then the moment one of them does well, it's like, oh yeah, that's our girl, go Shan, woo! But I don't know. I'd be glad. I would love to see it. But
do you know the Canadian national anthem? Do you know all the words?
Pass on that one. Maybe we'll. Okay. We'll quiz me on that at the end of the season.
That's why you're the junior Canadian correspondent. I am, of course, the chief Canadian correspondent, despite never having lived in Canada. But I am passing this one off to you, my subordinate there.
I'm assistant to the Canadian correspondent.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Out here, we had Todd technically had dual citizenship. I think he was some part American, some part Canadian. Had to give the Canadian part up, actually, I believe, in order to claim his $1 million for some IRS reasons. But good that he actually did that and didn't go the rigid hat route.
Yes. All right. So there, I believe, goes everything before the challenge. And if I'm forgetting anything and remember it later, we can bring it back up then. But for now, Dom, I think let's get into the way this challenge goes. And now that I say that, I don't know that I have anything written down about this challenge. Pretty straightforward challenge, where the green team is going to lose again. Not probably the biggest surprise there. And furthermore, the way this boot is going to play out, most straightforward boot of the season. How likely did you think it was that this was going to be something other than Genie getting voted out here?
I was fooled. I genuinely believed it could be any of the three, honestly. Maybe not Shan, given just how Shan-centric the season has been so far. But if that had happened and the whole fan base had just completely melted down, I mean, that would have been fantastic to live through.
I want to live in that. You have no idea how badly I wish we could live in that world as Survivor fans, for that to be on the table.
I wonder if maybe Shan is being set up to be like the next Marcus or something, where it just seems like a done deal, and then you have to pick up the pieces afterwards because you just assumed it couldn't be anything else.
I think that is in play, by the way. And I know that's a theory that is gaining momentum.
Yeah, I thought Ricard honestly could have gone here, and I don't know how I would have like ranked those outcomes in terms of likelihood, but I was fooled. I really thought this could happen, and so credit to them for fooling a hapless rube like me. And I think that's the mark of good editing, is when they can take what seems like it was going to be a fairly locked in outcome and make it seem suspenseful. And I don't know if it was them doing that so much as Ricard and Shan gave them enough to work with, where Ricard was just really laying his cards out on the table and being explicit about the incentives at play in a way that so few people ever actually are. And then Shan seemed like she was getting a little bit flustered, honestly. And this is something to track going forward with Shan, is that on the one hand, she's been to so many tribal councils so far. On the other hand, she's been in the power position in so many of them that it feels like we haven't got to see Shan under pressure yet in a way that it was kind of hinted at this episode. So if and when the first move is made against Shan, if that ever happens, I'm going to be keen to see how she responds to that, if she's able to clock that ahead of time.
Yeah, I think saw a lot from Ricard that was pretty interesting to me, because while Shan was off on Shipwheel Island, he and Genie were just by themselves, knowing they were about to go to Tribal Council. And I believe it's still the case that, like, whoever is gone returns to camp and doesn't have that long before they actually have to leave to go vote. And generally speaking, it seems like a disaster to be in the Shan spot, where you're about to go to a tribal council with three people and you can't talk to either of the other two. Well, they have nothing but free time to talk with no one else around, as three votes are about to go get put into that urn. But it seems like as soon as she got back, they were both just fighting over the opportunity to make their pitch to her there. But when Ricard was kind of putting on the show for Genie about why he wanted to go with her to the merge, and they'd be such an unexpected pair. I think there was probably a solid amount of honesty in the points that he was making, and it's also something that we'll see him, once Shan returns, bring up to Shan's face, which is he genuinely, and I think observantly and correctly, is very nervous about the prospect of like just hitching his wagon to Shan for the long haul, when it very much seems like she is going to be the one who's going to get all the credit for the way things are playing out for both of them. And that is a major, major concern in Ricard's shoes. So I think that is something very much worth monitoring. I know that they are kind of this season's Malcolm and Denise making it through to the next phase, even after just playing down to a tribe of two, and they voted together every time, and they're clearly each other's number ones but at this point. Although, who knows? I mean, Shan may feel better about Liana after just their time on Shipwheel Island. And this is, I guess, the larger point I'm getting at here. I think quite a bit more insight into the way Ricard is thinking than was necessarily presented on TV, because it's framed in terms of, here I am lying to Jeannie about what I want to do. But I would be pretty surprised if Ricard didn't actually have a lot of very real concerns.
And likewise for Shan, if she thinks that she gets to be the swing vote once again, potentially, then I think there's honestly a case for ditching Ricard, who seems like he really could sink you somewhere down the line and has the cunning to do that, versus Jeannie, who maybe is not as effective an ally as Ricard would be, and maybe there's some damage control to be done with her still, but at least it's not going to be out there trying to bring your whole empire crashing down the way that Ricard could if that relationship goes sour.
Yeah, and furthermore, if Ricard wasn't already nervous about various things pertaining to Shan and that being like his endgame plan, we have this whole scene play out where, now that Shan's idol has been activated, prior to finding out that Nasir had gotten it for the blue team before they were aware that it was going to be live that afternoon or whatever, Shan gave Ricard the extra vote that she had gotten from JD at the during the previous round, and now wants it back. And Ricard, as far as I'm concerned, very, very fairly is quite nervous about that, considering this is exactly what she just did to JD the round before. And Shan, I will gladly give it to you tomorrow or tonight when we get back from tribal council, but like, it seems to me like a borderline ridiculous request on Shan's end if she does indeed want to stick with Ricard, at least through this vote. And if I were in Ricard's shoes, I would be deeply concerned about Shan, it seems like, being pretty adamant about wanting this vote back from me right now, when I'm very comfortable giving it to her as soon as we get back from voting out Jeannie, which is what both of us want to do, right? The fact that she seems that eager to get this vote back from Ricard right now, even knowing that she's going to go on to keep him, I feel like I would personally be calling, not like an indictment upon Shan as a player, but I was unimpressed by what we saw out of Shan in this particular scene.
Yeah, it seemed like maybe the first example of overreaching, potentially, and putting herself out there in a way that it seemed like she could, going forward, like hide behind Ricard, in the sense that he's the bad cop, he's going to get a lot of the blood on his hands, and even if he's not actually the one responsible, he just seems more overtly wolfy, I think, so you could funnel that in his direction, whereas Shan gets to work her magic in the shadows. And yet, I don't know if that's really sustainable, because like, Ricard knows what the deal is, Shan knows what the deal is, and the moment one of them is unhappy with that arrangement, then the whole thing just crumbles, and it's all at war. So I don't know. I'm fascinated just by this scene. I'm so glad we got to watch it. And it seems so rare, honestly, that we get that kind of constructive disagreement between two allies, where sometimes it's, you know, like a Tony and Sarah thing where they're like bonded at the hip, but also sometimes can't stand each other and have these really strong disagreements over how to handle things. But often some of the successful pairings that we get, they seem so businesslike and so like, oh yeah, they just click and they're always on the same page all the time. I kind of like that these two aren't. I like that they both have their own incentives and are willing to kind of break this off the moment that it's not suiting either of them.
Yeah. So between that, where it seemed to me like Shan was overreaching a bit, and I would be very concerned if I were in Ricard's shoes, and then back at the beginning of the episode, I think it was at least arguably kind of overreaching to open that re-hidden idol there. I think there's a lot of merit in just leaving it in the bushes or whatever, assuming you feel like Jeannie is not going to get greedy herself there. This actually, I would say, despite loving the backstory we got, loving what we got with Shan and Liana, and obviously granting that it seems like at least in the short term, things are going to continue rolling or like flowing through Shan. It remains to be seen now that we're going to go have some weird non-merge next week, if that's going to continue to be the case. But at least for this week, I was very happy to grant that despite not being fully on board with some of the decisions and lines that she was taking over the course of this episode, it probably was still going to go her way an overwhelming majority of the time there. I'm at least floating the take, and I reserve the right to pull back on this, but I am getting not just big move energy from Shan, but like fancy play syndrome may be the wrong way of framing it. It seems to me like Shan is someone who perpetually wants it to be exactly as she would draw it up, like in a perfect world, where I think generally in Survivor, there are a ton of spots where you've got to give a little and be okay with only getting 95% of what you want to really be playing optimally.
Yeah, I wonder if it's good or bad for her that she gets to work some of that out now pre-merge, just before all of this is going to become irrelevant effectively, versus these Luvu people who have been cooped up there winning all the time, and it sucks to be them, it's a hard life, and they have not got the chance to just let out some of that that potential energy. And so, you know, if Erica's there really jonesing to make a move and she doesn't get to do that, and the first chance she has is at the merge, for example, maybe she's so much more likely to leap on it, even if maybe caution is to be preferred, versus Shan, all right, we'll do this now, get it out of my system, and then it's back to business as usual for what really matters here.
Yeah, we will see. There could be kind of an opposite argument, at least conceivably made to that, where like, if Shan really is striving to keep it 100 and it keeps working out for her, I could see that building up a kind of overconfidence potentially. But well, you could certainly be right about it going the other way. But at this point, though, approaching this voting decision purely from Shan's perspective, because it does seem like Ricard is very happy to vote out Jeannie and Jeannie is very happy to vote out Ricard. We are ultimately going to see Shan boot Jeannie here. And again, as we say an annoying number of times, pretty much every week, obviously this is a heavily edited TV show, and I'm sure much, much more was going into this decision than we actually got to see on TV here. But I do think it is worth noting that Ricard is telling her to her face, I know I'm not going to be able to beat you if things keep going the way that they have been going. And yeah, we get along great and have been a very cohesive unit to this point. But now if I'm in Shan's shoes and I hear Ricard saying that sort of thing to me, I am going to have some major red flags about it may not, it's almost certainly not going to be tonight, but somewhere down the line, clearly this guy is nervous about the prospect of going to the end with me, and that could come back to bite me. Whereas I don't know that that's necessarily going to be the case if I keep Jeannie around. Did you think there was a reason to keep Jeannie over Ricard?
Yeah, I think several. If you want to talk yourself into doing it, I think the case is easy enough to make for yourself. That observation by Ricard, though, I think is really interesting, and it contrasts so well with what Evie was setting up, where she said, "Look, I'm aware of the history here. So often, if you have this pairing of a man and a woman, it's always assumed at the end the man was a strategist and a lot of the credit by default goes to them." Whereas Ricard is like flipping that on its head. He doesn't think that, I'm sure he's aware of the history there and the numbers and whatever biases at work, but even despite that, it seems like he's giving Shan enough credit almost and enough respect that, I think she would beat me and she would be able to win people over. And it kind of seems like that's the case based on Ricard is like rubbing some people the wrong way, one of which being Jeannie, which is not ideal going into a 3-person vote where Jeannie is potentially a swing. And so often, like, Shan is the one who has the options and has the people on her side and is forming these real close friendships. And she has like this ride or die bond with Lyanna now this episode after meeting her one time. And that more on that front, I guess, as that develops.
I think it may come down to, sorry if I'm cutting off.
No, go ahead.
I think it may come down to like Ricard recognizing none of the people that we've been voting out along the way here are going to be on the jury. I'm not nervous about what they think about how all of this has gone. My concern is, as we've been doing this and as it will be retold at Final Tribal Council, where Jeff makes it now a point that we split this into 3 different discussions, outwit, outplay, and outlast, and I don't know which one of them this falls into, but Shan is the one who has all the stuff, the parchments, the advantages. She's getting JD's vote from him, and the optics of that make it look like, as far as the kind of material on the board is concerned, Shan is the one making all the big moves. And I know that Jeff is going to spend a third of Final Tribal Council talking to the jury like that is a third of the calculation that they should be doing, is who has the stuff and who plays it well. And it seems like Ricard is nervous along those lines about Shan getting all of the kind of like parchment credit. And I think that's a fair concern.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a fair concern. And also going into the next stage of the game, as you mentioned, all of this is that has happened so far is kind of irrelevant at this point. It's almost like a audition process or a warm-up for the main game itself, given that none of those people matter for the final jury vote. That being said, you have a sense now, you get to test how it is that people assign the credit for those moves within your own tribe and maybe extrapolate that to the other tribes. And on top of that, you have Shan going off and talking to Lyanna and making this kind of a strategic friendship. And you look at maybe what's going on the other tribes. We saw Danny and Deshaun note the gender split and who's being voted out so far. I assume Ricard is taking note of that as well for his part. So a lot to kind of file away at the back of your mind. And I think Ricard already knows if he wins this game, it's probably not going to be next to Shan. So does that mean you take the shot now if you can? Does it mean you find a chance to flip and vote her out later on? And that's your crowning achievement in the game? That's the move that really makes you the favorite? I don't know. I think you could take that both ways. But already, I think he's having to, he correctly is realizing he has to think about this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am guessing there is going to be more to come as far as the Shan and Ricard bonding and potentially unbonding is concerned. And I'm still at the point where I could see it going either way in the short term, but I am getting the vibe that Ricard is already quite nervous about this prospect of, oh, you're my day one, you're my ride or die. I don't think that is what we're going to be in store for if Ricard has anything to say about it there. So we ultimately, though, are going to see them continue sticking together. That is going to be it here for Jeannie Dom, a character I really enjoyed. Was a little quiet there for a week or two, but I still feel like we got to really get to know Jeannie just like as audience members, and I thought she was a ton of fun to have on the show. For whatever reason, I felt like Jeannie had kind of older school Survivor vibes. Well, totally granted, like she was certainly well aware of the game going on around her and was trying super hard, which is a lot more than you can say about many people who played in very old and very recent seasons of this show. But just the enthusiasm for the experience combined with being at least a little bit kind of like rough around the edges from a strategic or kind of tactical perspective, which I don't necessarily even mean as like a bad thing. I think it's a refreshing change of pace to have that from a few people in any given season. I was certainly sad to see Jeannie leave this early, and would have been very happy to have her continue on for many, many episodes to come. But that is going to be it for Jeannie. Any parting thoughts from you on the Jeannie experience?
I got a new school vibe from her, if anything, in the sense that it feels like a lot of seasons in the 30s, they would have these older contestants who you could pencil in as these early boosts, and most of the time that came through. And because they were gone so early and that was seen as inevitable almost, you never really had enough time with them to develop any kind of attachment. And it seems like based on that trajectory, you could have put Jeannie in that mold. But instead, even though their tribe was losing so often, because there were so many other people in the way, you know, JD self-destructing and Brad, and that first vote even was pretty contentious. It seems like Jeannie's number never really came up until it had to. And I almost wonder what could have been now, where it's like if that tribe just wins one more challenge at any point, you know, and it's they lose three instead of four, then Jeannie gets to the merge. And usually when the Jeannies of the world get to the merge, they're there for a pretty long time. So that she may have been robbed of an endgame spot here.
Yeah, and this may be just an easy comparison that I'm defaulting to because of the numbers involved, but I could talk myself into the idea of Jeannie being kind of the Russell Swan of this tribe, the way he was for Matt Singh, where a few people kind of played their own way out, and then the final two people from that tribe were going to have a hard time not being the final two people from that tribe, and just got unlucky that they lost as many challenges as they did there. And Jeannie just kind of went out because there was no one else that was realistically going to go out at this point, but probably was not super live to go out any sooner or any later. I'm explaining this poorly, but hopefully people understand the kind of Russell Swan parallel there, where it seemed like if she was going to be leaving from this group, it was going to be squarely with like three people left in the mix there. But there goes Jeannie, another person who does not end up rolling the shot in the dark die here. Understandable, I'd say, when it comes with also giving up your vote, and I'm not sure what she necessarily knew about Shan having an extra vote or who had the extra vote in whose pocket at that point. But I get it. My larger question, though, is, Dominic, I guess because I was someone who thought that we would have by now seen at least one person roll their die here, in your mind, what is like a fair over under on the total number of dice we see rolled this season? Because I thought it was going to be 3, 4, 5, somewhere in there, and obviously still could go that high or even higher. But the more we see of this, the more I'm wondering if it's going to be 1 or 2 or maybe even 0 over the course of the season.
I'd have a hard time believing it's zero. I think if it ever gets down to the point where it feels like it's six against one, six against two, and, you know, you think you're first to go off that too, at that point, pretty tempting to just accept defeat and take your shot in the dark. I wonder if actually you're going to see a bunch of them used at the same time, where if it does get into a spot where the stakes are very clear, you have this side and this side has a majority, and it's definitely going to be one of these three or four people on the other team. At that point, if one person rolls it, that might set off like this chain reaction, where like everyone just uses their shot in the dark because, you know, they just want more than anything to be safe for that one round.
Yeah, I'm trying to do some quick math in my head, and sorry if this is wrong, but if we somehow got to a point where there was like a very clear, like 6-4 majority, and the four knew that they were just like collectively screwed there, and no one was going to flip on the six, would it make sense? And sorry again, I'm trying to piece this together in real time and doing a bad job of it, but like, if you more or less know that there's a majority that doesn't have enough numbers to split their vote, maybe 5-4 is the better time for this, because the upside would be much higher if the numbers would then be even if you get it right. So let's say there's a very clear like 5-4 majority somehow. Does it make sense for all four people in the minority to use their shots in the dark, knowing that we now collectively have a 2/3 chance of one of us being safe, and there is at least some chance that the person who draws the safety in that positive timeline is also the person that they're putting their votes on? I think there could be exploitable kind of situations if everyone is on the same page, in very specific kind of tribal dynamics, where a group use, everyone agreeing ahead of time, okay, our best bet is to collectively just maximize our odds of one of us being safe and hope that it's the person they put their votes on. I think there at least conceivably could be something to that.
Wait, so does this function almost like an idol, in the sense of when you play your shot, the votes are locked in, and if, you know, everything goes according to plan, then you have effectively like immunized yourself after the vote?
I believe that is the case, that everyone still goes up to the voting booth, but the people who play their shots in the dark just don't cast votes and instead drop their dice into the dice receptacle and then pull something out of a bag to find out whether or not they are the one who is safe. And actually, the timing on that could be interesting. Now, man, this is way too many timelines to think through in real time on the podcast, but like, say we do decide, okay, our group of four facing this five-person majority may be best off all using our shots in the dark and just collectively increasing the odds that one of us gets it, and hopefully we get lucky, considering we're never going to get the majority. Like, our votes essentially don't matter anyway, so we may as well try to maximize our odds at the shot in the dark. I guess in that kind of situation, it wouldn't make a huge difference who knew what at what time, if your votes don't really matter, no matter what happens with the shots in the dark. But I'm now thinking about this added layer of, if we do know that several of us are going to go try to go for it at the same time, I would guess it is the case that you find out when you're up there in the voting booth, you drop your die in, and then you pull out a piece of paper from the bag, and it either says safe or sorry, you lost. Assuming, again, though, this is a situation where several people are in on the plan ahead of time, it seems very, very easy to work out some sort of signal where if one of us goes up and pulls the safety, we can indicate that to the other people, and they don't then need to use their shots in the dark. We can have a sign. We don't have to say anything, but we can have some sort of signal.
Really wish we knew how any of these twists actually work in practice, so we could math all of this out and come up with some like harebrained schemes. And that's part of the fun of following along at home. And sincerely,
Mike White
would
be happy then to hear you say that.
Well, not just for the strategy dorks among us, but like if you're trying to play along at home and saying, "Oh yeah, I would do that," you kind of need to know how these things work. You can't just maybe some people find that part of it fun, like speculating what the rules are, but I don't know. It seems like if you want this to be a part of the collective viewing experience, is the peanut gallery saying, I would have done this and I would have done that. If you just don't know how this basic element of the game is meant to work, then that's kind of a non-starter.
Yeah. So we, again, very difficult to roll through a bunch of these hypotheticals that may not even follow the rules that are in place. But there probably are some galaxy brain maneuvers that can be implemented that we will talk about in future podcasts once we know the actual ways that these mechanisms work. But for now, Dom, I believe that is it on episode 5. Other than the next time on Survivor, we're getting something along the lines of a merge, but not specifically a merge. I saw Josh Wigler tweet out that he was hoping that they would become one-worlded, and I'm always here for some one-worlding, the twist, not the season, but it appears, and I think we should probably push this for even after the edit zone, but it appears it is going to be some sort of hyper convoluted twist that is totally unprecedented. So I'm not sure exactly what to be making of that. I personally don't even remember many of the specifics. I saw it briefly and immediately just like erased it from my brain. But Dom will refresh us on what it turns out. We have some sort of confirmation. I think it's from Redmond, so I'm taking it as gospel, as that's what's going to happen. Some sort of confirmation about the way this is going to go, but I'm guessing there are plenty of people listening who are not inclined to know that at this hour. But Dom, anything from you before we get into the edit zone, and then after that, we will get into what we know about the fake merge?
No, let's do it.
Okay. Well, then I'll just drop the edit zone bumper after you said that. Oh, actually, no, I won't. I will flag up for the people that he is on Twitter at DomHRV. I am on Twitter at Colin Stone. And now we will hit the edit zone.
You are listening to the Dom and Colin edit zone.
Mike Holloway,
Michelle Ken,
Brad Culpepper, Rob and Sandra.
You are listening to the Dom and Colin
edit zone.
What are you doing?
Tune out now.
All right, here we are in the edit zone. Dom, I mean, of course, the place to start is, as usual, with Shan here. Yet another week where pretty much everything was filtered through her perspective on all of this. Actually, I saw a stat, according to whatever the confessional count I saw was, Shan had more confessionals this week than everyone other than like two or three people in the entire cast have had all season combined to this point.
Yeah.
And again, it's yet another week where Shan is going to a tribal council and is of course going to get a bit more visibility by virtue of that. And it could be the case, as actually great friend of the podcast, the good doctor, Amanda Rabinowitz, floated this theory to me, and you brought it up kind of in passing a little earlier, that maybe this is a situation where Shan is getting so much screen time while they can still give it to her, because she really is controlling a lot of this, and she's a great character, of course, but this could still come up short. When you were talking about Marcus and Gabon, there is absolutely that possibility on the table, and as Dr. Amanda said to me, maybe someone, perhaps Liana, after what we saw this week, could then kind of inherit the Shan story. Or maybe someone like Ricard could get a bunch of credit for turning on this person who was once his close ally, but now has become too big of a threat. I am by no means trying to come in here and call Shan a lock. But that being said, I think I already am at the point where I'm actively trying to talk myself into any sort of theories for any reason that it could be someone other than Shan winning this season, which is not a fun place to be after five episodes.
Or it could be Evie, right? If Shan goes down in this dramatic blindside and then Evie is the one person left standing who you feel like has been a consistent presence throughout the episodes and seems like they're playing pretty smart and you like them, it's easy to see how that could come together. So I don't think this necessarily has to mean that it's all Shan all the way. Maybe Shan's edit is getting too big to fail at this point. Like, maybe the normal rules of how governing, like, who gets how much content are just completely out of the window. Thinking back to the most recent example we have of Tony in Winners of War, his edit really rocketed back and forth between like being pretty low key and quiet at some points to there was that one episode where the one where he got what were they calling it, like framed or bamboozled, something like that. Extorted, there we go. Yeah, Tony gets extorted. I think in that episode he had like some obscene record-setting number of confessionals, and then, you know, Tony went on to win and did not look all that surprising in retrospect. So yeah, maybe we're overthinking this and it is just the straightforward level one play of, you know, the coronation of Shan, and I guess you would love to see that, because what else are you meant to be hoping for instead?
Right. No, I totally believe that Evie is totally in the mix still. I think Deshaun is someone I'm trying to talk myself into still being in the mix here. Nasir has certainly gotten a bunch of content and I'm guessing is pretty popular at this point with the casual fans, which goes a long way with me as far as talking myself into him being someone that they could be setting up for everyone to be happy for on finale night. And maybe Xander, I guess I can maybe see drawing live still, even though this was not a great week for him there. But I believe the numbers that I threw out last week were something like, I think I said Shan 60, Evie 25, and then the other 15 weighted pretty heavily towards Deshaun and Nasir in some combination there. And I'm not upping Shan like a crazy amount, but I think I may now put it at like Shan 75, Evie 15, and the remaining 10% blocked out in some configuration to mostly Deshaun, Nasir, and I feel like I'm forgetting someone, at least one person that I could still see drawing live here. But overwhelmingly, I would say it is Shan's game to lose from an edit perspective at this point. And I would absolutely love to live in a world where someone can get this kind of treatment and then have it just be taken away from us, like we were talking about with the prospect of Shan being blindsided by Ricard and Jeannie potentially this week, or we show up next week and whatever happens, it somehow gets turned around on Shan. There is literally nothing I want more from Survivor than to believe that that sort of thing is possible, and for any given week to feel like at least potentially a week where whoever the Shan figure of a given season is could leave. But I am not at that point at this hour, as a Survivor viewer. Although again, it is a new era. Anything is possible. I feel comfortable about having hedged my bets there. It is overwhelmingly likely to be Shan, as far as I am concerned there. So, as mentioned, good week for sure for Nasir. A lot of fun with him here this week. Not a ton as far as either of Evie or Deshaun was concerned. I guess more Deshaun than Evie here, but still have both of them drawing live. And then a couple other just kind of random edit notes that I had. When Tiffany was talking to Xander and kind of busted him in that lie, it did stand out to me that Tiffany got subtitled at a spot where I didn't think it necessarily required subtitling. Her saying, "Oh, I can spot a lie from 100 miles away, dude." Having that subtitled and having those words pop up written on the screen, I could definitely see being something that ages very poorly. And so I'm just kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop on whenever it is that Tiffany totally has the wool pulled over her eyes, potentially by Xander, potentially by someone else. But my big question is, what do we make of Ricard? Is he just like explicitly going to turn on Shan, as far as you can tell? Is that what we're being set up for?
I think he's going to try and fail, is my read on the situation at this hour.
Yeah, I think I'm on. I meant to ask that question, kind of suggesting, of course, if he tries this, he's going to fail at it. But I think last week I would have thought it was more possible that they do roll very deep in the game together and he just kind of gives it his best shot if he does wind up in the end with Shan. But after this week, it feels like a greater priority for Ricard, as far as I can tell, to not open the door for that sort of thing to happen, especially when we got to see off on Shipwheel Island, Shan say to Liana, "Oh, if I'm not here on day 12, it's because Ricard can't be trusted." So does seem to be leaning the direction of the time will come where he's going to make a move. And at this hour, yeah, I would have a very hard time seeing that move getting through there. What are you thinking at this point about Liana? She's someone that I feel like they probably would have highlighted either more and or differently when Yellow was going to those votes, if she were the eventual winner. But Amanda Rabinowitz has at least talked me into the possibility that she could like inherit Shan's edit if it does go sideways for Shan. Where are you on Liana at this point?
I think this episode was the perfect opportunity to really introduce Liana in a big way and to give her own segment when we have Liana and Shan in that great scene over on the island together. And it felt like so much of that was being delivered through Shan's eyes and from her perspective, whereas if you want to sow the seeds early of a Liana win potentially coming off betraying her close friend in Shan or in Evie or someone else, then it feels like this would be the time to really hammer that home and like lay the groundwork now so that you can come back to it and hit the ground running later on. And my sense is they didn't really do that.
Yes. I feel like we probably would have seen more from Liana's perspective during that moment with Shan, which I guess for them was like a 3-hour hike. But another spot where I feel like Liana probably would have been highlighted a bit more if she were the eventual winner there. But I definitely am buying Liana being very long for this game. If I were doing a last longer kind of draft, I still think Shan has to be the number one chalk pick. But Liana would be very, very high on my board, potentially as high as number two, while recognizing that it's probably not going to be in the capacity of being the eventual winner there. Any other edit thoughts that you had on this episode?
So with the merge of some kind coming up, I think it's worth taking a big picture look at the two tribes to see how we see that initial vote breaking down and who we think has this long-term potential. And it feels like the natural thing in a three-tribe season is for the two smaller tribes to gang up on the one big tribe. Just mathematically, that's fairly straightforward. And then edit-wise, it seems like that's what we're heading towards as well here, where it would not shock me if when you have Ricard and Shan as two of the most well-developed players left in the game, they team up with this Evie, Liana, Xander block, who, and certainly the three of them, to some degree, have all been pretty well covered, and Evie maybe the number two behind Chan at this point. Like, it seems like everyone in that alliance has some kind of long-term future ahead of them, whereas Luwu, I guess, so I'll throw this back on you, bearing in mind that they never had to do anything. They never had to vote someone out, and so we don't get that time that we're forced to spend with them. Do you think that we're seeing more or less than you would expect from that tribe with that in mind?
I mean, if we want to use Galoo as kind of like the most extreme example, and I'm sure others have existed along the way, they're at least getting better than the Galoo treatment of like the this tribe isn't ultimately gonna matter a ton to the big picture story that we are telling here. And I think while I would personally love to have seen more of the Blue Tribe to this point, given how much they have to work into every single episode with all the new twists and advantages dropping each week, I do get it in one sense. With that in mind, that being said, I feel like this blue group, depending on what happens with the way that this air quotes merge ends up going down, has pretty much 1 week to get it together, or else that collection of people from the smaller tribes is almost surely going to run a large percentage of the game going forward. And I do not know that I have a ton of faith in this blue group to stick it out here. And actually, the other kind of edit thought that I had that I didn't bring up in the main section of the podcast was, when we got that scene of Sydney doing the spear fishing, yeah, she's someone they may want to go out of their way to highlight just kind of in general, just based on the first 40 seasons of Survivor. But I also think at least a case can be made that they are just reminding us of who Sydney is and what Sydney is like, so that when Sydney is the one that this falls on next week or very soon, there was at least some sort of like breadcrumb trail along the way that would conceivably flag that up for people on a rewatch. Like that Sydney spearfishing thing, I thought was frankly so boring and so out of nowhere that it feels like it is just a reminder of, hey guys, this is Sydney. Remember that name because she's coming up next week.
Yeah, so my hot take at this time is, I think Nasir is going to be the last man standing from that blue team, and that's going to tie into his larger kind of underdog narrative. And I don't know exactly, I mean, how could I, how that's going to play out, but it feels like he has more of a, more of that underdog quality to him than anyone else. But like, okay, you expect Sydney to get blindsided, and ideally, you know, helping herself along the way there, right? Or it would make a lot of sense if like Danny or Deshaun was that typical athletic merge boot who's the biggest threat and maybe the most obvious leader front man from the other group. Whereas the others seem so underdeveloped in Erica and Heather that, oh, they'll just go in like a double boot or just be like some accidental casualty of a twist along the way and no one's going to mind too much. Whereas Nasir, we're definitely meant to care, but it feels like there's more to add to that story before long.
I would agree. I would say I would take Nasir against the other five to be the last original Blue Tribe person left in the game.
Maybe Nasir, and just like Nasir goes out in sixth and Heather goes out in fifth or whatever. And,
sure,
okay. You don't even remember that last part 5 years from now.
Exactly, yeah. Nasir, I think, is the one we're meant to have our eye on the most out of that group. And I'm hoping that Nasir can work his way into whatever kind of underdog alliance, as far as I'm concerned, like inevitably takes over the game. Maybe I'm reading way too much into that scene we saw, I think it was last week, that we flagged up in the edit zone there, but the sequence where they gave, I think it was Erica giving some sort of confessional as the others in the tribe were very concerned about Erica, and it was played over, not B-roll, too specific to be B-roll, but a clip of four of the people in the from the blue team just kind of paddling their boat in the water, and the boat just flips on itself. I'm certainly buying heavy into that being some symbolism there, that the, just the whole blue team is going to have its boat flipped over when this merge rolls around. But Dom, I think the edit zone is pretty straightforward for the time being until further notice there. So we do know a bit about what is actually going to happen at this upcoming, not a merge, but kind of around the time that a merge would normally happen point in the game. I would say what we are about to get into is certainly not spoilers as far as I'm concerned. We don't know anything about who's going to get eliminated or whatever, but we do know a little about the way the mechanism is going to work. And by that, I mean, Dom knows about it. As I said, I read quickly through whatever it was that Redman posted that got leaked somewhere, and would advise if that sort of, you know, finding out about that sort of thing is not something that you would be interested in, now would probably be the time to tune out as we get into the merge details zone. So thank you for making it this far. But Dom, explain to me, ideally very slowly, what we are about to see happen next week.
Okay, so don't quote me on this, but we have 12 people going into this merge. We're going to divide these into two random teams of five, not six, five. And then those two teams will compete, and one of those teams will be immune, and the losing team, those will be vulnerable going into tribal council, where the whole tribal vote is still going to be 12 votes plus more extras or less with shots in the dark in play. But then the second part of this is those two people who were left out, they get to decide if the outcome of that challenge should stand or be reversed. So the winning team now becomes the losing team and vice versa. And then once that has been decided, the losing team, whoever that is, they now compete for individual immunity. So instead of five people being eligible to receive votes, it's going to be four instead.
What's even the point of running the first challenge if the two random people just get to choose which four or which five are going to be playing for individual immunity anyway? And am I getting this right that no matter who's on which team, no matter what happens in the challenge, no matter which group the twosome decide should be vulnerable, there are going to be five names initially on the table, and then one of them is going to win personal immunity. So no matter what happens, there are only going to be four eligible people to be voted
Correct.
Out at final 12.
Yes.
That is insane.
Yep. there it is. And the question I have about this is, if you want to do this, which I don't think you should, but granting that premise for now, why do it now? Why steal the thunder from the most reliably interesting episode in any season, the merge, instead of at final 11, let's say, where you would think the numbers would line up more cleanly, where it's five on each side, one person is left out, and that one person is now the kingmaker. They have all the power. And that's an episode where usually like the battle lines were drawn previously, and now we're just following through on whatever we sketched out that episode. Now the whole thing is up in the air again, and maybe it's more interesting.
Now that I'm thinking through all of this, we could literally have an advantage Geddon at final 12 if we have if we have squarely Xander, Nasir, Shan, all on the same fivesome, and then one of the other people in that fivesome wins the immunity necklace. There is literally one vulnerable person with 12 left in the game.
That is a terrifying thought. Yeah. So not sure why we're doing this or why we're doing this now, but otherwise, great idea, guys. Keep it coming.
Yeah. So that, I guess, is going to be probably a pretty big spectacle on Wednesday night. And I'm already looking forward to hearing what Survivor Twitter has to say about that. Looking forward to what Casual Anna and the rest of the casuals have to say about that. And I'm excited to, you know what, actually, that might be a good time to get some casual and a bonus content to see what she thinks about how all of that ends up going.
Hey, if I feel like I need a week off at that point, whether for Survivor reasons or other reasons, then that's the perfect time to get some casual fanners in on the
show. I think this could be a good week to gauge what the people on the street are thinking about this new era of Survivor. I don't want to pass too much judgment too quickly, but I will say I will be surprised if this is something that I end up loving, but you never know. Survivor has certainly surprised me in the past there, and sight totally unseen, I am convincing myself more and more, I suppose, that this is somehow going to come down on Sydney, but that is a... that is me playing my shot in the dark there for this season. Do you have a merge-ish boot prediction?
Well, I'm currently trying to talk through my cat, who decided...
I was going to say, what was that?
Decided that I've enough podcasting for today. Maybe a little less talking, a little more feeding would be in order here. So we'll get to that very shortly. Don't you worry. But... yeah, if I had to call my shot, I think Sydney is a good dark horse pick, honestly. And I guess if you're choosing between that tribe, then there are only so many light and or dark horses to choose between. Like the safe pick would be someone like Danny, right? But maybe, like, honestly, what if this is how someone like Heather goes?
Yeah.
If it's like everyone else on Luvu ends up immune through some means or another, and it's like, well, we're doing what we have to, even if we'd rather use this round on someone more consequential.
Yeah, I would generally struggle to see how Heather would get voted out at Final 12 based on the way things have played out to this point, but that may be your theory from earlier coming in, is this totally unprecedented and potentially kind of controversial sequence of twists and advantages all just kind of fall together in perfect harmony for everyone not named Heather, and that is how she is ultimately eliminated there. But either way, I am going to be watching with fingers crossed that this is not a disaster. And the good news is, having now, I believe, kind of come to a clear understanding of the way that this is going to play out, I feel good about being braced for it rather than experiencing this in real time and probably firing off a tweet or two that I would eventually come to regret there. So we'll see what happens. My expectations are kind of low for this upcoming episode, but hoping, as always, for the best there. Dom, anything else that you want to get to this week?
I am in a state of complete zen serenity regarding this episode. I have no expectations, will have no takes, and will just watch and observe and let it wash over me.
Okay, I will attempt to do the same thing and should probably just ban myself from going on Twitter over the course of Wednesday from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m., but we will see how that goes. Thank you guys who have made it this far. Wow, did we run long this week, but we will talk to you probably after next episode, unless it's a complete shit show, in which case we may be having a casual Anna week here to see what the average audience member is thinking about the way things have been going to this point. One more time, he is on Twitter at DomHRV. I'm on Twitter at Colin Stone. Getting close to the end of The Mole 2 over in the Patron Zone at patreon.com/DomandColin. And that, I think, is finally going to wrap it up for us this week. We will talk to you guys relatively soon, one way or the other. Take care.